that's five layers to one question. But it goes on in the same paragraph. To what extent will these objectives ensure your program will be successful? Okay, your objectives, that means your project outcomes and outputs as defined by your goals. And then specifically, they want you to discuss EPA's national measuring environmental results and anticipated outcomes and outputs. That adds about six or seven more layers to it. So altogether, you have 14 layers for that one paragraph, and each one of them requires discussion. That's what you have to do with each one of those questions or categories. You must break them down to understand what is actually being asked of you, and do not just gloss over it. Going on to 44, slide, how will TPO ensure project and EPA goals are met? Again, you refer back to page 5 where the outputs and outcomes are explained. And the relevancy of your proposed program certification to the placement goals. Slide 45, they want you to discuss the screening criteria and the process in relation to retention. How are you going to stop the attrition rate? Local incentives, mechanisms to assist in hiring. That's where your BS ARC grantee comes into play, and your partnerships with the city and the state, and your employers. Very important, and job development strategies. 546, community involvement, employee partnerships. Page 24, total points here that you be able to earn are 20. And also for the TPOs, the training objectives program, training program, objectives and plans, that's 20 points. So remember, look at the weight of these and understand the importance of the responses. Here we want you to talk about the partnership. Partnerships should be diversified. Shouldn't be just all CBOs, community-based organizations, or all businesses. It should be a mixture of CBOs, local businesses, employers, schools, community, residents. That's who should make up your partnership and your community advisory board. You will document and discuss your early notification to the targeted community, the methods used, the community involvement in the application process. What exactly and how did the community have input into the development and decision-making process for this proposal? Slide 47, you will discuss your local partnerships. And in this, we want you to discuss the value added by the partners. How are they going to help you meet your outcomes and outputs, your results, your success? Partnerships for non-funded activities. How are you going to leverage those activities not funded by EPA, such as child care, transportation costs, student stipends if necessary, GED program, placement costs? All of that is to be discussed there. Employer partnerships. How are the employers going to be involved? Developing the curriculum, commitment to hire. Make sure your letters of success reflect what you state here. Slide 48, programmatic capabilities and institutional capacity. Total points here is 15. Your project management ability. What's your past performance like in grant management? If not specifically with EPA, any other federal program. If not a federal program, state program. We want to know how you met your reporting requirements. How successful were you? Your institutional capacity to conduct training. What about your support staff? Are they skilled? Can they keep the books straight? Can they keep up with your students? All of that. That's institutional capacity. Your facilities. What do you have the equipment there for training? That should be discussed there. Slide 49. Programmatic capability and institutional capacity continue. We want to know your instructor's expertise and credentials and correlate the above with the successful and productive job training program that you're proposing. Slide 50, past performance and environmental results, past performance as well. Total points here is 15. How will your proposed project training and placement ensure success and meeting the EPA's expected outcome and output? Discuss your past success rate in training and placement. We need to know how successful you were and how did you do it and how do you plan to do this one. Slide 51, past compliance with reporting requirements. Again, we want to know, did you follow through with your reportables, with your deliverables? And how will you self-police yourself to ensure your proposed project's compliance with meeting EPA's expected outcomes and outputs? Those are your measures of success. What will you do in that timeline to make sure that you're on target? Slide 52, performance measurement, total points, 10 points. Your project's milestones and objectives, these must be measurable and realistic. Give us a chart as well as a slide summary, narrative, sustainable employment, replacement, and retention. What are you going to do? That goes back to your job strategies so that these are not short-term, four-week, six-week jobs and then are on unemployment again. Who will help you with your job search support and resources? Where is that going to come from? Slide 53, performance measurements continue. Your tracking process in turn, remember, is a minimum of 1 year. Plan to evaluate the program compliance and measure project success. Again, that goes back to the measures of success. Resolution plan for attrition and other conflicts. Discuss this. You got to have a plan in place. How are you going to keep the participants there? And also program strategy for long-term sustainability. When EPA funds are gone in that 2 years, what will you do to keep this program going? Community needs, total points is 10. Personify the targeted community. Give us a picture. We need the demographics. Note the sensitive populations, the poverty rate, the unemployment rate, any specific health patterns. Now, in order for us to see a picture, we need a contrast. Give us the demographics for your targeted area in contrast to the city, to the state, to the county in which it's located. The same thing for the poverty rate and unemployment and any sensitive health patterns. The impact of the indicators, those are the indicators on the community. Those are what was listed above, the poverty rate, unemployment rate, health patterns, risk, environmental risk or threat. Slide 55, relate those indicators back to brownfields impact on the target community, such as environmental, social, public health, and economic. Slide 56, discuss environmental justice concerns, i.e., high occurrence of landfill sites, risk or threat of harm from them, high frequency of the specific diseases in the area, asthma, cancer, black lung, high unemployment rate, substandard housing, those are environmental concerns. 57, community need continues. Address social issues as faced by residents who are considered low-income population, minority population, socioeconomically disadvantaged population. Discuss these residents and what has occurred because of brownfields in their home community. Slide 58, again, community needs. We need to know that you've done a labor market assessment. How else would you know that there's a need for environmental technicians in your area? What are your employer needs in that area? What's the demand for skilled environmental technicians? Tie it together with your proposed project. Slide 59, budget and resources. Total points, 5. It's from page 28. We need your narrative. Make sure it correlates with the budget table and includes leveraged dollars and in-kind services. Make sure that the narrative reflects proposed work plan tasks. These are clearly stated, detailed, reasonable, and no prohibited costs. The table, flip side of the narrative, reflects the work plan task, easily followed. The order is consistent with budget narrative, no prohibited costs. Separate tables for EPA-funded cost items and non-EPA-funded items. And with this, I would suggest that you not be creative. Go ahead and use the sample table that's provided for you in the guidelines. You know, the governor is just like a university professor. Feed us back what we give you, and you get an A. Okay. Okay, slide 61, leveraging total points, funding source, cash amount donated, and services donated. And where possible, assign a cash value to that service. Slide 62, other factors that we take into consideration. And when I say we, that's the senior management selecting committee for these grants. We look at for fair distribution of the funds between the urban and the non-urban areas. The EPA's 10 regions, new and previously awarded grantees, and please note that those awarded in 2007 are not eligible to apply for fiscal year 2008. The environmental justice community, special governmental designation, and overall program priorities. And that being said, again, is based on the highest ranked proposals. The scores are important, so make sure your responses are accurate, brief, current, and on point. Slide 63. And before we go to that, there's something that I neglected to discuss with you before we go into the strengths and weaknesses, is Section 4B seems to be confusing people. We are required by OMB to tell the applicant what is required of them, and basically that's what Section 4 is. That's a list of all that we are expected to have in the application package. The documents that come out of 4B are your cover letter, your required applications, and I'm missing one. Of course, it'll come to me. But basically, Section 5 for formatting purposes is what you follow. Thank you. Section 5 is what you follow for your outline of how you respond. You follow the order for responses as given in the guidelines. You start off with your training, program, objectives, and plans, and go through it sequentially and answer the responses in that order. Now to the strengths and weaknesses. Strength, the proposal is well written. Pages are labeled and numbered, and when I say labeled and numbered, that means labeled with the applicant's name, some type of identifying information. The proposal is organized and follows sequential order of the guidelines for responses. The document complies with the page limitation. For this particular grant proposal, is 17 pages for the proposal narrative and 20 pages for the supporting attachment. Proposal includes table of contents and index. That's not required. And it's not counted in page limitation, but it helps the reviewer when reviewing the contents of your document. Meets all eligibility requirements. Documentation of status included. Demonstrates the community needs. Documented community early notice and involvement. The budget narrative is detailed, clear, reflects the tasks outlined in the work plan. Parallels budget table and contains no prohibited cost. And this is slide 68. Budget table is the flip side again of the narrative. It's detailed, cleared, reflects tasks outlined, and is easily read with no prohibited cost. You have documented institutional capacity. You have excellent institutional training and placement record. That's performance and condition and experienced instructors. Your strength, you've leveraged funding for prerequisite skills, life skills, and job readiness. That's slide 70. I'm on documenting diverse partnerships, schools, employers, businesses, community residents, and you have a solid commitment to hire by the employer. And with that, we do not expect for any employer to say he will hire not knowing what his future demands will be. What we do expect in the commitment to hire is that he will give first consideration to those trainees completing your program based on their future needs. Slide 71. Strengths continue. You have clearly stated measures of success with reasonable and clear timelines. That means you set your training and placement goals and the timeline is doable. You have a good discussion about long-term goals and strategies for sustainable growth. Again, reasonable and detailed. Slide 72. Your letters of support contain current dates, substantiate claims for institutional performance record, proposed JT program, and that's job training program activities that you're including in your work plan summary, and committed partners and their roles. Weaknesses. Don't meet the eligibility requires, and even if you do, you have not documented it and substantiated your claim. your proposal is vague or too wordy without adding merit to the substance of your document. It's incomplete, partial, or no responses. Response to all of the ranking criteria. You have any inadequate discussion about the impacts and challenges, economic and health, specifically as a result of brownfields. You have little or no demographics to substantiate need and no showing sensitive populations, if any. And if you don't have any, say so. That means that you know what's required, but you don't have anything to discuss in that area. Never leave anything out. State whether or not it's relevant to you and move on. You have vague or insufficient or no documented community early notice and participation. No or insufficient discussion about institutional performance, again, training and placement. Insufficient or no information regarding instructors, credentials, and experience. No documented employer's commitment to hire. Those are letters of success. And these are not to be boilerplate. No discussion regarding applicant relationships and experience with the targeted community. No leverage funding or in-kind services. Budget table is confusing and hard to follow. When contacted, your list of references and partners are vague or clueless about the proposed project and its role. That's where it's very important that they get that draft. You get that draft that they have not been directly involved in it in the first place to them to discuss. When called or contacted, no discussion about how the cost of activities not covered by EPA will be funded. No documented partnerships or is not sufficiently discussed. Vague or no measures of success. Vague or no plan for resolution of issues such as attrition rates, child care issues, transportation issues. No or unclear timeline, narrative, or chart. Letters of support, specifically. No or insufficient letters of support. The data is not current, substance of letters not relevant to proposal, boilerplate language for all or most of the LOSs. That means that the only thing different on the letter is the company and the signature, the company's name and signature. The LOS does not substantiate claims for the institutional training record, institutional placement record, instructors, credentials, proposed job training activities, committed partners and their roles. The job training projected timeline for this particular fiscal year 2008, the Federal Register notice went out, and this is slide 83, the Federal Register notice went out August 29, 2007. The proposals are due October 19th, that's in 2 weeks. The National Job Training Panel is expected to convene December 12, 2007, and the grant awards will be announced before spring 2008. Slide 84. The only type of proposal assistance that we can give you are process and procedural. No specific ranking questions can be asked singularly or individually. Today is the day to ask that. To submit questions via the email, you can do that to Joe Sifra or to myself, and by U.S. mail, Joseph Press's mailing address is provided. For me, Region 4 contact, I'm listed here, and in your guidelines, all 10 regions and headquarters contacts are listed. And that's slide 85, and that concludes the presentation, and we're on to Q&A. Hello?
Hello.
No questions?
No, I have a question. I have some questions, so I'll just go ahead and read them.
Sure.
For some of the stuff that you covered might answer some of the questions, just in case. The first question, if we currently receive NIHS funding, which ends July 2008, are we still eligible to apply?
It ends July 2008?
It ends.
No.
We're not eligible to apply?
No. Unless you can show where this particular program differs from what you have with NIEHS.
Okay.
The 2008 fiscal year, oh wait, the 2008 fiscal year begins now, October 1st, we're in it. and it doesn't end until September 30th, 2008. So I won't say no and you're out the waters, but you have to make a very clear and convincing case for yourself to show where you differ.
Good. Now, you said the period, you said something about October.
Right. The government fiscal year begins October 1st and ends September 30th. So we're now in fiscal year 2008 as of October 1st, 2007.
Okay. Oh, okay. I see. Okay. Next question.
Okay.
Do job places need to be on Brownsville designated site, or can they also be on any project that involves environmental cleanup?
Has to be on Brownsville's
designated site.
Designated site, yes. No Superfund site.
Okay.
But Brownsville covers a lot of things. Construction, cleanup, remediation, abatement.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of ways that you can define a Brownfield's activity, but it cannot be Superfund.
Okay. So,
Kathleen, this is Amber.
Sure.
It's a Brownfield's eligible site, right?
Right.
Okay. I don't think it officially has to be designated, right?
Right. Well, when I say designated, thank you. Let me clear, because semantics can hurt. It is Brownfield's eligible, an eligible Brownfield site, and there is a site eligibility thing that we use. So if anyone needs to the site eligibility criteria, let me know, and I can forward it to them.
Cool. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Third question.
Sure.
And this, we're a small community in East Palo Alto, but can the target population be from surrounding community or just the community that receives prior Brownfield funding?
It can, if you can make a case for it, as long as the partnership and there is a connection, a nexus to it, it can be surrounding communities as well.
Okay. Four, what type of documentation?
I've forgotten your name already.
Alonzo, that's all right.
Alonzo. When I say nexus, that's a nexus to the Brownfields ARC grantee, okay?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, go ahead.
Okay. What type of documentation do you want to see regarding community involvement and community notification?
The way that community involvement is that you've done public meetings and they've had an opportunity for comment, and you show how you've integrated the comments into your decision-making process as far as development of the proposal. And early notification, what ways have you notified the community?
Good.
Radio, TV, public meetings, draft document on view at the library, public library, that type of thing.
Okay.
Copies of PSAs, you know, as documentation, public service announcements.
And use that expectations that they're notified way in advance about what we're trying to do, right?
When you say way in advance, we have accepted notification. Well, I'm not going to say that because we want early notification. The week of the proposal is not considered early notification.
Okay,
that
gotcha.
The proposal is due.
What if you don't have funding to do public notification as far as radio, TV, and things like Shannon?
Well, you don't have to have funding for that. If you're a nonprofit organization, radio and TV have what they call public service announcements, PSAs, and those are free. All you have to do is send. They usually call the station, call them, and see what their process and procedure is. Some will accept fax PSAs. Others want them on company, stationery, and postmark data mailed to them. Some will even take a telephone call with it. But you find out in your local area how your TV and radio stations will accept it. But that's what PSAs are. They're free announcements for the good of the community.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
My last question, again, because we're a small community here, do the jobs as far as the environmental cleanup, can the people that we place, be placed in surrounding communities that have to do with the environmental cleanup?
Yeah.
Okay.
So hey, that, this is Gene Brayboy.
Yeah.
We may have covered this, but I just want to make sure. When we look at the headquarters application kit, we have budget forms in there and also another outline differs from the overview section that you had seen.
Right, that's the one that where I said I had neglected to discuss it with you. Section, you talked about Section 4 and Section 5, where they give two different outlines. Okay, Section 4 is basically the section that the descriptive narrative of the guidelines where it explains the application and the proposal contents that are expected to come back from the applicant and the procedure for the submission of the application proposal. The things that come out of 4B that you need to make note of is the SF, the Standard Form 424, with the original signature from the official authorized signer, the cover letter with the listed inclusion, and the project narrative and summary of the proposed work plan, which would follow the threshold criteria but precede the ranking criteria.
Okay, then we would not use...
Hired attachment.
Yeah, we would not use the budget forms in the...
The budget form, basically, when they don't give you a sample form in 4B. What you're talking about is the 424 form. That's required as part of your application. The sample budget format in Section 5 is required as part of your proposal narrative. Two different documents for two different purposes.
Ms. Curry, Jack Swidek, I have two brief questions, if I may.
Sure.
First question has to do with leveraging.
Yes.
Specifically, I'm wondering, can Workforce Investment Act dollars be used for in-kind contribution?
Oh, yes. We applaud those when we see a WIBI.
Okay. The reason I asked is it mentioned that federal grants cannot be used as matches without specific statutory authority, so I wanted to be careful.
Okay, but see, that's not leveraging dollars. They're going to come on as one of your partners, right? They're going to be doing the things that we don't pay for, such as the GED, the job training readiness.
Correct.
The remedial classes, they're partners. That's different.
That's a little bit
different. Leveraging, look at it as donated money with no specific activity involved except that they're going to give you the money or they're going to give you, they're just giving you the money. In-kind services is not considered leveraging as a match. You understand?
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's where the thing is. It's not a match. It's leverage funds for services, and leveraging is not necessarily a match.
Okay, so it's good to put workforce investment dollars for in-kind contributions.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Then my other question is has to do with attachments, and I understand they have the 20-page limitation.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure. I also understand that support letters do not count as part of this 20-page limitation.
That's not true. Support letters, I think, are some of my other JT people out there, clarify if I'm incorrect, but I think the support letters, where we have asked for letters, those don't count. But where you're giving, like, the general letters of support up to a certain amount, now, it has to be reasonable. They don't count. But where you're sending in added support letters from communities, residents, and CBOs, I think they may count as far as the attachments. What's your thought on it, Noemi, Amber? Are you all still online?
I'm still here.
It's like the dog is answering the question.
Yeah.
I agree with what you're saying. I want the letters of support to
Right. But see, we have required attachments here where you have the general letters of support. I don't think anything that we're specifically asking you for will go into that amount, that 20-page amount, because those are required things. Such, just like the cover letter doesn't account because we're requesting that for you, and it's not scored. You see what I'm saying there?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Hi, this is Stephen Silver in El Paso, Region 6. How competitive is it within the tribal universe or community?
We have a few tribal applicants. We don't have as many as we would like.
Good. Okay. That's a good
but
problem.
Again, within that, though, we need a really solid document.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. TAC is not one of my strong points, so I hope I don't mess up here.
No, you won't. I'm a New Yorker. You're not going
to
hurt me.
We would love to have more tribal applicants, but in the past, what they have submitted has not been strong enough to compete against the other submittals.
I can appreciate that. Okay. And we have all, the group I'm working with has already received the assessment grant for fiscal 08.
Okay.
So that's a good start.
Okay.
Plus, so did the city. I worked with the city's project on that, and I'm also working with the tribes, so consequently, I've got a lot of the documentation. Okay, that's good news.
Okay.
Thank you.
This is Sherlyn. I'm calling from Region 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working with young people, and I have the question, if we were taking our young people through the training, they start at 16, they're done at 18, graduation from high school, is it a possibility that they can have an option of going on to higher education and an appointment?
Okay, there's what we have found out is that we question whether a 16-year-old has a maturity level to deal with some of the issues surrounding environmental technician work, such as the safety issues and protectiveness. That would be something that you would have to really sell hard and have clear and convincing argument to say why this specific group of people, young youth, you think would be able to handle the responsibility of that. And second, of being an environmental technician, because you understand some of this work is very, very dangerous,
mm-hmm.
and can be lethal if not fully respected for the severity of the work that they're doing. Secondly, yes, they can go on to higher education. However, unfortunately, right now the United States government does not look at that as placement, successful placement, because remember what our national goals are. Economic, generate, you know, improve the economic base around the brownfields community. So if they're not being placed onto jobs, that means that they're not generating an income, which means that money is not coming back into that community. And you cannot empower someone if they don't have the capital base in order to compete.
Okay.
I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
The other thing you had mentioned earlier about the National Institute, and I didn't get everything.
Okay, there is a National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences that's located out at Triangle Research Park in North Carolina, and they have an excellent minority workers training program. And because in the past EPA has funded them, we have looked at it as double dipping, if you will, forgive the vernacular. So we would not fund a program that is also being funded by NIEHF dollars, because we have funded them for those programs in the past. And also, if they have a minorities workers training program, program in the area, we realize the environmental technician field is dependent upon the demands of the employer. So unless there's a lot of remedial work going on, you would overflood the market with environmental technicians, and thereby people would be trained with no possibilities of jobs. So we have not wanted the efforts duplicated in an area.
Okay.
And just to follow up on that question, because it's coming up again, only this Alonzo again.
Yes.
Only if we can show that we're doing something different
by
the NIHS grant, correct?
Right. By your targeted audience. Say, for instance, they do only 18 to 25. Well, you're going to target 25 to 40, okay? And they train in construction, environmental type things. Yours is going to be more site analysis, lab analysis, in-site type of field for assessments, okay?
Okay.
Rather than actual. So those are the kinds of things that you have to show a difference. And that's just an example, because I don't know what I'm talking about as far as the actual working
good
environmental thing out there, so don't use those words. Don't go writing madly, this is what you're going to do. Do your research first and find out what's out there and what's available in your area. Because, again, it has to be tailored to your area and to your market.
And I can probably look at the job for the employer and see in the past if our students were not doing those type of work and it's different, then that's something I can show the difference.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you said this site is where I can go to see if there's anything going on
yeah
in our area?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's National Institute of Environmental
Health Sciences.
And again, those jobs.
And to make it easier for you all you have to do is look in the guidelines. They give you the website there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And those jobs could be, again, in the surrounding community, not in my community.
Well, if you're saying, then you don't have a need if it's not in your community. What you need to do is to start looking in your community to define what environmental jobs are there, and then you branch out.
Right. Okay, I got you.
Okay.
Right. There's some things happening here, but we know there is a lot of things in the outside community.
Right, and you're really close to San Francisco, so
right.
I mean, so you have plenty of opportunities there, but also you have some serious competition up there in San Francisco, too.
That's correct.
So, no, but if you can't show where there's a need in your area, then you've targeted the wrong area.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions?
Not for me. So I appreciate
Oh, yeah. One of my coworkers here, also a Brownfields project manager, but with the arts, Brian Holtzclaw, he's the one that hosted the lead. He was the lead on the hosting of the Brownfields arts tutorial. He wants to cut in and give a plug. So,
hey, this is hi, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. Look forward to getting all your applications. I just wanted to do a small advertisement. On the additional resource page where it has resources and where you're getting a download of this presentation, there is a similar tool that we use for the ARC grants. It's very, very, very simple. All you do is put in the page numbers that you're using, which the default we set at 17, which we highly recommend you go for the max. Put in the length of your cover page, whether it be one page or 1.25, and we always recommend that you connect immediately behind that, the threshold. Put in the number of threshold pages, and there's a third section, I think it's called project description, and it'll subtract that and give you the number of pages left for the ranking criteria. Now, on that little mini program, we'll tell you according to the pages, the weighting of the ranking criteria sections, what's a good length for these sections. And we did this little program because we were briefing unsuccessful applicants, and we found out a lot of people who failed getting a grant, they love to write on and on about maybe a section that was only 5 points, maybe gave us 3 pages, and it wasn't really proportional to the weighting. And otherwise, the section was 20 points. They gave us maybe a half a page. So this is a little program help written by my colleague Bill here, which gives you just a brief recommended page length for each of the ranking criteria sections based on the weighting. It's pretty simple. If you got any questions, my phone number's on there. There's a little mini instruction page. We got one glitch right now. We're going to repair it probably by today. So go ahead and take a look. Thank
Where
you.
Do you find that again?
On the resource page.
Resource page?
Yeah, on this, on the Clue-In website. And also, just to, I just want to make sure that you all understand the difference between Section 4 and Section 5 of what's required of you. I'm going to go through the list one more time. The standard form 424, fill all of those pages out, and yes, there's a budget in there, and yes, you must complete it. The cover letter with the listed inclusions, and the project narrative and proposed work plan summary. And that's a summary. We do not expect for you to submit 10 pages on your work plan. That's a summary of your activities, work proposed activities. And that follows the threshold criteria and precedes the ranking criteria. And when you get to Section 5 for the ranking criteria, you follow in sequence for responses the ranking categories, and yes, a budget table and budget narrative are required there as well. Any other questions? And also your required attachments. Don't forget that. That's in Section 4, too. Make sure those are all included.
There's another question.
Yeah, this is clear. There's another question. Or
sure.
A question.
Okay, first, Alonzo, you last.
Okay.
The other two ladies, please, go ahead.
Does the job training have to be site-specific?
No. No.
Okay.
It has to be area-specific.
Area-specific. So
in other words, your employers, those are the people that will be hiring your trainees, you must have a relationship, a working relationship, an ongoing relationship with them so that you will know their needs and you will train accordingly. That's how you design your curriculum, to meet their future needs, their projected needs.
Okay, great.
Okay. The other young lady, and then Alonzo.
Okay.
Hello? Yes? Okay, Alonzo.
Okay, good.
I just want to be clear about the support letters as part of the 20-page attachment. I didn't quite get that.
Okay, the general letters of support, basically from your employers, from your partners, where we have asked for letters of support, those I don't think are counted. I won't. Well, let me put it this way. They won't be now because I'm putting it out here nationally. So, but they are not, don't go crazy with them, okay?
Okay.
Because I can make an argument that this is what I posted out here to you all, that they're not to be cut off. But generally, our policy has been what we require of you, we don't count as part of your page limitations. And we're requiring the cover letter, requiring general letters of support, the list of references, the... So those are the attachments, and they won't be counted against your 20-page attachments. But again, just this list, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm stating for, and Amber is backing me up on that. So there's two of us.
All right.
Okay. Any other questions?
No, that was probably the other lady. That was Susan.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I've got one here. This is Mike Jones in Waco. I've got a quick question about the formula. That's in the documents, or is there a website? I didn't get
No, that. It's if you look on your Clue-In, there are listed resources.
Okay.
Additional resources.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Also, the glossary of environmental terms is up there. Go to the additional resources page.
Okay.
The presentation is there.
Okay.
All of that will be listed there.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, Kathleen. This is Gene again.
Yes,
will there
sir.
Be a budget justification in the narrative and also another one in the appendices?
Sir, the narrative and the budget table, that's all in your appendices for your attachment. If you read the guidelines, it states that you discuss briefly your budget and with the table being in the attachment and the narrative in the part of the ranking criteria. And that's briefly. If you want a longer explanation, I think you should attach it to the table in the attachment.
Okay.
Because you don't want to, remember, that's only 5 points.
Yes,
you don't want to use up all of your pages talking about a budget. As long as your budget table is clear and it matches your narrative, you're good to go.
Okay.
And remember, no prohibitive costs.
Right.
No administrative costs whatsoever, and you'll be okay. Any other questions?
Let me follow up on what you just said. In terms of administrative costs, you're not going to pay for a program director?
No, sir.
Outreach coordinator?
No, sir.
All right.
Now, if you have a program coordinator, what we will pay for are those, the time that he spends on generating the reports that are required. Go to page 35, I said 36, 37, 35, 36 of your guidelines. And it says Appendix 1, Prohibition on Uses of Funds. And down at the very bottom it has Section B, Programmatic Costs. And it says EPA has determined that the administrative cost prohibition does not apply to programmatic costs. Costs for activities that are integral to achieving the purpose of the grants, even if the agency considered the cost to be administrative under the prior Brownfields program. And it goes down and it gives you 3 instances where the prohibition does not apply to direct costs of training. For example, costs for instructor salaries, program management salaries, to the extent that costs includes the scope of the work for the Brownfields Job Training Grant. That's where some of your programmatic, your program coordinator costs could be absorbed. But you have to show a nexus between what you're doing. So that means the entire cost of the person's salary will not be covered. Just that cost that covers the scope of the work of the Brownfields Job Training Grant.
Okay,
make sure you understand those 3 exceptions there on page 36. That's the reason why I mentioned the Appendix 1 so many times. It's very important that you all read that.
Ms. Curry, Jack Swidak in Jacksonville. One other question about support letters.
Yes, sir.
Several have come in already, but they've been given to us over the Internet without a signature. Can we submit those like that, or had we better go back and request a firm signature?
Well, to be on the safe side, I would suggest a firm signature. Even if it's a fax document, tell them they don't have it. If they want to save the stamp, fine. Just fax it over, because all we're going to see is a copy anyway.
Okay, thank you.
But they need to print that letter off and put a signature down there with a title and a current date.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
Kathleen?
Yes.
This is Ashley. I just wanted to let you know that there were not any questions submitted over the online portion.
Okay, great. Okay, if there are no longer any questions to be answered, please know that you can still email Joe or myself for questions to be responded to. But at this time, I'll conclude if there are no more questions.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.